Sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. It's an educational service in the public interest. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, the Law is heard on KU Band Radio at Telstar 5 over North America and worldwide on the Internet 7 days a week. For more information about the Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned with us for tonight's special report on circumcision right after this message. You know, we Americans may hold the dubious honor of being the most litigious people in the world, but when it comes to law, we seem to be among the world's most ignorant. And today, most Americans feel powerless to resist the evils that they see perpetrated against our liberties, our privacy, and our property by these powerful government agencies, multinational corporations, and the news media. But you know, we don't have to remain helpless. The institution designed by God and incorporated into our Constitution and Bill of Rights is called the judicial power. The courts are the proper repository for the protection of our rights, liberties, and property, not the Congress or the political process. Now, did you know that the privilege against self-incrimination is neither accorded to the passive resistant nor to the person who is ignorant of his rights, not to one who is indifferent thereto? It is a fighting clause, and its benefits can be retained only by sustained combat. It cannot be claimed by an attorney or a solicitor, and it's valid only when insisted upon by a belligerent claimant in person. Now, that's a citation that comes straight out of United States versus Johnson. That's why I contend that we ought to listen more to the judges and less to the politicians and the lawyers. Now, did you hear what that judge said? In that statement, he said, your rights cannot be claimed by your attorney or solicitor. Your rights can only be claimed by you, the belligerent claimant in person. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. It's entertaining, educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, you can go to my website. It's georgegordon.org. It's an easy one to remember, georgegordon.org. Click on the email. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about circumcision from the perspective of a lawyer who says it's mayhem, child abuse, and it's grounds for a civil action against the doctors and the hospital. And then we followed it up with a preacher by the name of Zanger, and he said that this circumcision is unchristian. In fact, it's not even Jewish. And there's a split, I guess, in the Jewish religion over this thing of circumcision. There's some sect of the Jews that believes that circumcision should be abolished. And both of them agreed, both the lawyer and the preacher agreed, that there was no medical evidence, no medical reason, no medical justification for this practice called circumcision. I threw in there, by the way, the concept of the contract, that there seemed to have been, if I remember my catechism correctly and my upbringing in what they call that confirmation class, and that was that there was a contract with a guy named Abraham called a covenant of circumcision. And I broached the subject, and we'll take this up before we finish the series, and that is, has anybody ever read the terms and conditions of the contract? You know, if I was in court and I was arguing over something, and I think I would want to go to the contract itself to see what the intent of the lawmaker was when he enacted, when he wrote up the contract. I know that the judge is going to want to see this contract. I think that if I was going to put in an argument, a legal argument, like Mr. Morris did, as we saw the last time, I think I would put the contract into evidence. I think if I was Mr. Zanger, I'd say, hey, listen, this contract here, it expired. This contract was repealed. This law has been abolished. I don't think we saw that in either the religion argument or in the legal argument. Let's take a look at the history of circumcision in the United States in the words of the physicians, the doctors. What do the doctors say about this thing of circumcision? Starting in 1860, 0.001% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. I don't know if that number is correct. I'm surprised when I read reports like this. I'm surprised. I would have thought, you know, maybe Americans weren't circumcised back in the 1860s. But I would have thought that 10, 20, 30% would have been. And that's because the people who came here, you know, the Jewish immigrants that came over here, I think they practiced circumcision. And there may not have been too many of them, but I think that from, you know, the time they first arrived, I think they were probably practicing that. And I think that circumcision from the Israelites, that is the French, the Germans, the English, the Scots, the Irish, and so on, would have been practicing it also, although I could be dead wrong. The report that I'm reading to you right now says that it's only 0.01% of the U.S. male population circumcised in 1860 in the United States of America. I'll take their number and we'll run with it. In cases of masturbation, we must, I believe, break the habit by including, or inducing rather, such a condition of the parts as will cause too much local suffering to allow of the practice being continued. For this purpose, if the prepuce, that's the foreskin, is long, we may circumcise the male patient with present and probably with future advantage. The operation, too, should not be performed under chloroform so that the pain experience may be associated with the habit that we wish to eradicate. Now, that's cited by Athol A.W. Johnson on an injurious habit occasionally met with in infancy and early childhood, published in The Lancet, Volume 1, on the 7th of April, 1860, on pages 344 and 345. There is an official medical journal. And what's the purpose? Masturbation. We got to stop that at all costs. Now, I'm not exactly sure why we need to stop that, but for some reason, whether it's religious or medical or psychological, masturbation, we're assured in 1860, is so bad that what we need to do is to circumcise this child. Well, in 1871, 1% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. Well, now, that's quite a turnaround from 0.001 in 1860 to 1% in 1871. I refer to masturbation as one of the effects of a long prepuce. That or not that this vice is entirely absent in those who have undergone circumcision. I want to repeat that. Not that this vice, masturbation is a vice. I didn't know that. I have never seen anything in the scripture that would indicate that masturbation is a vice, but, you know, this medical, from the point of view of the medical profession, in 1871, they called it a vice. They said it's entirely absent in those, or is not, rather, absent in those who have undergone circumcision. Now, the purpose for circumcision is to prevent masturbation, but it doesn't work. I think that's what I'm reading here. Though I never saw an instance in a Jewish child of very tender years, except as the result of association with children whose covered glands have naturally impelled them to the habit. M.J. Moses, The Value of Circumcision as a Hygienic and Therapeutic Measure, published in the New York Medical Journal, Volume 14, 1871, on page 368 to 374. All right, so now that's Dr. M.J. Moses. Well, it doesn't say doctor, it just says M.J. Moses, The Value of Circumcision. Okay, now by 1887, 10% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. Boy, we're making progress now. In 27 years, we've gone from 0.01% to 10%. It says hip trouble is from falling down, an accident that children with tight foreskins are especially liable to owing to the weakening of the muscles produced by the condition of the genitals. So, if you're not circumcised, you're going to fall down and break your arm. Now, I happen to know quite a few boys that are not circumcised, and I have never heard of one of them complain to me that they fell down, broke their arms, or broke a bone because they were not circumcised. Now, in reading these medical journals, you know, back in the mid-19th century, almost reminds me of medicine in ancient Egypt and Babylon, doesn't it? You know, wipe or rub dog manure or dog dung into the cut to heal it, or some other such nonsense. Now, on the one hand, they're telling us that the purpose for this now is masturbation, which is a vice. And then once we circumcise you, there's no evidence that it's going to prevent this vice. And now in 1887, the trouble with falling down is caused by tight foreskins. That's somewhat of a stretch, it would seem like to me. No pun intended. There can be no doubt of masturbation and its injurious effect, and of the proneness to practice it on the part of children with defective brains. So anybody that masturbates must have a defective brain. Circumcision should always be practiced. It may be necessary to make the genitals so sore by blistering fluids that pain results from attempts to rub the parts. Now that comes from Angel Money, Treatment of Disease in Children, Philadelphia, P. Blancas in 1887, page 421. Well, there it is. I kid you not, these are the reasons for circumcision from medicine's point of view. And we're going to take a look here. This is the evolution of the medical perspective for this practice of circumcision. Now, we've gone from 0.01% in 1860 to 10% in 1887. Look at this. In 1888, we've gone up to 15%. It would look like to me that this is a money-making deal. That if we tell people their kids are going to fall down and break their arms if they're not circumcised, or that they're going to practice a vice called masturbation, and we've got to stop it at all costs. Now, remember, these children now, they're not prescribing this at 8 days. Now, I want to point out that in the Bible, Moses gave us a statute that says on the eighth day you circumcise, and it just happens. It's a coincidence. I know. It just came out this way. But the vitamin K, the blood clotting factor in blood, is at its highest level in a child's body on the eighth day of its life. It's lower before the eighth day, and it decreases after the eighth day, and it gets lower from that point on. Now, isn't that just real special? Now, 15% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. A remedy for masturbation, which is almost always successful in small boys, is circumcision. Boy, we'll teach those boys a lesson. The operation should be performed by a surgeon without administering an anesthetic, as the pain attending the operation will have a salutary effect upon the mind, especially if it's connected with the idea of punishment. So by 1888, we are inflicting circumcision on boys. Not on the eighth day now, but I mean, you know, these kids could be, oh my gosh, they're not 5, 6, or 8, they're masturbating, aren't they? God, these kids have to be 12, 14, 16 years old. And we're doing this to punish them in 1888. Now, these are the medical doctors. We're not talking about religion here. We're talking about medicine. 1891, in consequence of circumcision, the epithelial covering of the glands becomes dry, hard, and less liable to excoriation and inflammation, and less pervious to venereal diseases. The sensitivity of the glands is diminished, but not sufficiently to interfere with the copulative function of the organ or to constitute an objection. It is well authenticated that the foreskin is a fruitful cause of the habit of masturbation in children. I conclude that the foreskin is detrimental to health and that circumcision is a wise measure of hygiene. Jefferson C. Crossland, The Hygiene of Circumcision, New York Medical Journal, Volume 53, 1891, page 484 and 485. So by 1891, it's to keep you clean. It's for cleanliness. Okay, in 1891, measures more radical than circumcision would, if public opinion permitted their adoption, be a true kindness to many patients of both sexes. Jonathan Hutchison on circumcision as preventative of masturbation, Archives of Surgery, Volume 2, 1891, page 267 and 268. Evidently, the medical people believe that masturbation must be akin to the cause of cancer, heart disease, and leukemia. By 1895, in all cases in which male children are suffering nerve tension, confirmed derangement of the digestive organs, restlessness, irritability, and other disturbances of the nervous system, even to cholera, convulsions, and paralysis, or where through nerve waste the nutritive facilities of the general system are below par and structural diseases are occurring, circumcision should be considered as among the lines of treatment to be pursued. Did you get that? That's Charles E. Fisher, Circumcision, in a Handbook on the Diseases of Children and Their Homeopathic Treatment, Chicago Medical Century Company, 1895, on page 875. Now, we're prescribing circumcision by 1895 because you may have nerve waste and nutritive facilities of the genital system are below the structural diseases are occurring, and maybe you're suffering from nerve tension or derangement of the digestive organs. So we'll cut off your foreskin, that'll solve it. You've got digestive problems, cut off your foreskin. You got nervous tension, we cut off your foreskin. I mean, come on, guys. I'm not a medical doctor, you know, but I can't help but chuckle here a little bit. I wonder if these guys, you know, have buggy payments to make or boat payments or something, and they're selling circumcision here to make money. Now, you talk about something being ludicrous. Pardon me, but in 1895, 15% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. And in all cases of masturbation, circumcision is undoubtedly the physician's closest friend and ally. It seems like the biggest preoccupation with medicine in the late 19th century was masturbation. Boy, we've got to stamp out this vice at all costs. I'm not really sure that that's a big problem in life now, is it? To obtain, by the way, excuse me, let me back up a minute. Can anybody point to masturbation and then say to me, it causes cancer, heart disease, leukemia? I don't know, boys and girls, I don't know, maybe it's a religious thing, maybe it's bad, or maybe it's mediocre or something like that, but it seems like to me a normal bodily function, you know, kind of like urination. Oh my God, this kid's urinating. Let's cut off his foreskin. Oh my God, he's defecating. Let's cut off his foreskin. Oh my God, he's got nervous tension. Let's cut off his foreskin. Now, I want to point out that this is medical science. This is medicine talking in the late 19th century. The reason why we're circumcising people in the United States is for these reasons, and I'm reading right out of the medical books here. This is modern, right up to the minute, allopathic medicine. Now, one of them here is a naturopath. 1896, local indications for circumcision. Hygienic, phimosis, paraphimosis, redundancy, where the prepuce more than covers the glands, adhesions, papillotoma, eczema, acute and chronic, oedema, chancre, chancroid, cicatrices, inflammatory thickening, elephantitis, nevus, epithelioma, gangrene, tuberculosis, preputial calculi, hip joint disease, hernia, systemic indications, onasm, Masturbation, onanism, they got it in parenthesis here, masturbation, seminal emissions, aneurysis, dysuria, retention, general nervousness, impotence, convulsions, hysteroepilepsy. Oh, boy, has this thing really, listen, not being circumcised by 1896 has a whole list of diseases that we can't even pronounce, which are curable by circumcision. Are you getting this now? All you got to do is cut off this foreskin over here and it will cure cancer, heart disease, and leukemia. This is, by the way, the editor of the Medical Record, Circumcision Medical Record, Volume 49, 1896, on page 430. This is a doctor's book. All right, in 1897, the prepuce is an important factor in the production of bacillus, that's tuberculosis. This can be proven by the immunity of the Jewish race from tubercular infections. S.G.A. Brown, A Plea for Circumcision, Medical World, Volume 15, 1897, page 124 and 125. Jews don't get tuberculosis, and therefore, circumcision must be the reason. It would seem like to me that the Jews not eating pork, shellfish, and other unclean foods would make more sense to me than the foreskin on your penis. But this medical journal says, oh, no, the Jews don't get tuberculosis because they don't have foreskin. I wonder if they ever thought about cutting off the tip of your left thumb, if maybe that would do a little something for you, or maybe cutting off the lobe of your right ear. Maybe. Can you imagine if cutting off the foreskin of your penis has health effects which will prevent tuberculosis? Could you imagine what cutting off your whole right ear might do for you? My God, think of the advances in medical science. Now remember, this is the kind of insanity that comes from medicine. We're practicing the same thing today, but we won't look back. You see, about 100 years from now, we will look back on modern medicine today, and we'll laugh at the insanity and the ludicrousness of it, in the same way that we do bloodletting. And George Washington was killed by a barber. He was having his blood let out because his blood was dirty, and so they used to believe that by bloodletting they could solve the problem. They did, for George. It killed him. Solved his problem. His dirty blood was never a problem to him again. 1899, it says, not infrequently, marital unhappiness would be better received by circumcising the husband than by suing for divorce. So if you've got an unhappy marriage, what you need is a circumcised husband. So says A.W. Taylor, Circumcision, Its Moral and Physical Necessities and Advantages, Medical Record, Volume 56, 1899, on page 174. Excuse me for laughing, but this is pretty darn humorous. It's just about as good as Mad Magazine, I'd say. 1900, 25% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. Boy, have we made progress. In 40 years, we've gone from 0.001% to 25%. And by golly, now this circumcision cures anything and everything. I mean, if you've got a malady, just cut off your foreskin and that'll cure it. This is a cure-all. This is better than elixir, isn't it? Finally, circumcision probably tends to increase the power of sexual control. The only physiological advantages which the prepuce can be supposed to confer is that of maintaining the penis in a condition susceptible to more acute sensation than would otherwise exist. It may increase the pleasure of coition and the impulse to it, but these are advantages which in the present state of society can well be spared. If in their loss, increase in sexual control should result, one should be thankful. I'm not quite sure what that means. Circumcision increases sexual pleasure, I guess is what the message is there. Editor of the Medical News, A Plea for Circumcision, Medical News, Volume 77, 1900, page 707 and 708. Hey, I kid you not, boys and girls, I'm reading it right out of the medical journals here. 1900, it has been urged as an argument against the universal adoption of circumcision that the removal of the protective covering of the glands tends to dull the sensitivity of that exquisitely sensitive structure and thereby diminishes sexual appetite and the pleasurable effects of coitus. Granted that this be true, my answer is that whatever may have been the case in days gone by, sensuality in our time needs neither whip nor spur, but would be all the better for a little more judicious use of curb and bearing reining in. That comes from E. Harding Freeland, Circumcision as a Preventative of Syphilis and Other Disorders, published in The Lancet, Volume 2, December 29th, 1900, page 1869 through 1871. Well, that was a big thick book too, 1869 pages. So on the one hand, it increases sexual desire, and on the other hand, we ought to cut it off so that we can slow you down. I mean, it's almost like we'll give you some cocaine to pick you up, and then we'll give you some downers. You take uppers, and then you take downers. And you could do all of this with circumcision. That's the amazing part. Another advantage of circumcision is the lessened liability of masturbation. Oh, my goodness, by 1901, here comes this masturbation problem again. Along foreskin is irritating per se, as it necessitates more manipulation of the parts in bathing. This leads the child to handle the parts, and as a rule, pleasurable sensations are elicited from the extremely sensitive mucous membrane with resultant manipulation and masturbation. The exposure of the glands penis following circumcisions lessens the sensitivity of the organ. Therefore, it lies with the physician and the family advisor in affairs, hygienic, and medical to urge its acceptance. So we got masturbation and cleanliness again. Ernest G. Mark, Circumcision, American Practitioner and News, Volume 31, 1901, page 121 to 126. In 1901, frequent urination, loss of flesh, convulsions, phosphatic calculus, hernia, nervous exhaustion, dyspepsia, diarrhea, prolapse of rectum, blanitis, acute phimosis, and masturbation are all conditions induced by the constricted long prepuce, and all to be rapidly remedied by the simple operation of circumcision. H. D. Naylor, A Plea for Early Circumcision, Pediatrics, Volume 12, 1901, page 231. So it appears that the pediatricians are starting to come into the game plan now. Hey, listen, let's get these babies circumcised early on here. I guess they wanted to get in on the money tree also. By 1913, 35% of the U.S. male population is circumcised. In 1902, we read, I have repeatedly seen such cases as convulsions, constant crying in infants, simulated hip joint diseases, backwardness in studies, inuresis, marasmus. Don't ask me what these things are. I don't know, but there's some kind of symptoms and diseases, and we're going to cure them by cutting off this foreskin. Muscular incoordination, paralysis, masturbation, neurasthenia, and even epilepsy is cured or greatly benefited by the proper performance of circumcision. W.G. Steele, Importance of Circumcision, Medical World, Volume 20, 1902, page 518. 1912, 35% of the U.S. male population is now circumcised. Boy, we're making progress. The little sufferer lay in his mother's lap. The dropsy had taken the form of hydrocephalus. I then circumcised the child. The head diminished in size, and in 2 weeks, the condition of hydrocephalus had disappeared, and the child was once more dismissed as cured. E.H. Pratt, Circumcision or Official Surgery, Its Philosophy, Application, and Technique, edited by B.E. Dawson, Newark Physicians Drug News Company, 1912, page 396. 1912, circumcision promotes cleanliness, prevents disease, and by reducing oversensitiveness of the parts, tends to relieve sexual irritability, thus correcting any tendency which may exist to improper manipulations of the genital organs and the consequent acquirement of evil sexual habits, such as masturbation. Evil sexual habits. Now, evidently back at the turn of the century, people were really concerned about this thing of masturbation. It just really drove people nuts, and they had to solve that problem. I guess it's kind of like the problem of an appendix or tonsils and adenoids. You know, it poses a problem called sore throat, and we're going to solve that problem. Cut it out. Now, that's modern medicine. Now, we'll take a look at some more modern medicine when we come back. So hang on a second here, and let me tell you that you're listening to The Law Hour. I'm your host, George Gordon. Now, The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest sponsored by the Gordon Law School, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived for your listening convenience on the Internet at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Well, let's see what else we've got here to tell you. You know, the lessons on courtroom strategy and procedure that you hear on this program are just a small part of my 2-week basic courtroom strategy and procedures class, and this class includes lessons on what to do and what not to do at the arrest or when you're served with a summons, citation, or a complaint. And rule number one is this: don't say anything, keep your mouth shut, and shut up. If you can learn rule one, you can win about 86% of your legal cases. Now, all of the evidence that's going to be used against you is going to be furnished by you, and your government is fully capable of making their own case without any help from you whatsoever. Now, listen to what the judges have to say about this thing of keeping quiet, or don't say anything and shut up. The first judge had this to say. He said, who would believe the ironic truth that the cooperative taxpayer fares much worse than the individual who relies upon his constitutional rights? That's cited in U.S. versus Dickerson. The second judge said this in Belknap versus United States. He said, you can and must keep your mouth shut for protection under the Fifth Amendment. And in Marchetti versus United States, the third judge put it this way. He said, the constitutional privilege was intended to shield the guilty and the imprudent as well as the innocent and the farsighted. Now, if you'd like more information about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you call me at 417-273-4967 and be sure to ask for my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the Gordon Law School. Remember, it's entertaining, educational, informative, and best of all, it's free of charge. Now, courtroom strategy and procedure is available on compact disc for home education. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click on the email machine. Send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Would you do that? That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about modern medical practice, the evolution of the practitioners. Notice that in 1860, we were just concerned about masturbation. As the years went by 12, we're concerned about, oh my God, there must be 15 or 20 diseases, and all of them can be cured or immensely helped by circumcision. It promotes cleanliness, prevents disease. In 1914, we read, it is generally accepted that irritation derived from a tight prepuce, P-R-E-P-U-C-E, I guess that's the way to pronounce that, prepuce, foreskin, for us guys that are down here on the docks, may be followed by nervous phenomena, among these being convulsions and epilepsy. My God, you'll get epilepsy if you're not circumcised. Let me ask you this. Of all you people out there listening to this program who are not circumcised, can you tell me if you've ever suffered from epilepsy? Have you ever suffered from any of these other diseases or problems? Well, listen, if you do, just cut off that foreskin and it'll solve that problem. Do you believe that? I'll tell you, modern medicine today would laugh at this kind of foolishness. If you walked into your doctor and said, I've got epilepsy, I need to be circumcised, I think he'd look at you and say, you need a straitjacket. But this was medical practice in 1914, you know, at the time the Titanic went down, just 30 years before I was born. This is what they were selling. I've always said that the medical practitioners, the doctors, are a bunch of voodoo practitioners that are practicing voodoo on people. And just listen to this, and doesn't that tell you about the same thing? Things haven't changed. It's just that we have names and different practices and different procedures and kill more people in the process and make more money doing it. But they go on to say it's therefore not at all improbable that in many infants who die in convulsions, the real cause of death is a long or tight prepuce. The foreskin is a frequent factor in the causation of masturbation. Circumcision offers a diminished tendency to masturbation, nocturnal pollutions, convulsions, and other nervous results of local irritation. It is the moral duty of every physician to encourage circumcision in the young. It's the moral duty of every physician to encourage circumcision in the young. So this is where the circumcision comes from in the United States. Now remember, this lawyer Morris says, you know, we need to stamp this out. He wrote that about 1970, when the circumcision rate had grown to 90%. Now, this last citation comes from Abraham L. Wolbarst, Universal Circumcision, Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 62, 1914, page 92. 1915, circumcision not only reduces the irritability of the child's penis, but also the so-called passion of which so many married men are so extremely proud, to the detriment of their wives and their married life. Many youthful rapes could be prevented, many separations and divorces also, and many an unhappy marriage provided if this unnatural passion was cut down by a timely circumcision. L.W. Westhoff, Benefits of Circumcision, Medical World, Volume 33, 1915, page 434. The problem in 1915 was that men were too sexual. Today the problem is we need Viagra to get it up. In those days, we needed circumcision to calm it down. Again, in 1915, the prepuce is one of the great factors in causing masturbation in boys. Here's that masturbation problem again. Here's the dilemma that we're in. If we don't teach the growing boy to pull the foreskin back and cleanse the glands, there is the danger of smegma collecting and the adhesions and ulcerations forming, which in their turn will cause irritation, likely to lead to masturbation. If we do teach the boy to pull the prepuce back and cleanse his glands, that handling alone is sufficient to gradually and almost without the boy's knowledge to initiate him into the habit of masturbation. Therefore, off with the foreskin. William J. Robinson, Circumcision and Masturbation, Medical World, Volume 33, 1915, page 390. By 1920, we were up to 50%. 50% now are being circumcised. I don't know if that's good or bad. I'm just reporting the facts here. So by 1920, circumcision is an excellent thing to do. It helps to prevent hernia due to straining, and later it helps in preventing masturbation. The ordinary schoolboy is not taught to keep himself clean, and if he is taught, he thinks too much about the matter. So if you don't teach him to keep clean, well, then he'll be dirty, and if you do teach him to get clean, he'll think too much about it. That's I. Solomon's For and Against Circumcision, British Medical Journal, 5 June 1920, page 768. I don't know, should you educate your boys about cleanliness, or should you shut up about it? They tell you right here, they warn you, if you tell him about it, that'll be a problem, and if you don't tell him about it, that'll be a problem. I guess we're just born to be a problem. 1928, phimosis may be a predisposing cause of masturbation in some cases. Hemorrhage following circumcision at birth cannot be considered seriously as a contraindiction. Maidal ulcer due to ammoniacal diapers in the circumcised is not a contraindiction. Routine circumcision at birth is warranted. Editor, Routine Circumcision at Birth, Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 91, 1928, page 201. So by now it should be done routinely. You know, it's kind of like pouring a little mercury into your eyes, or, you know, a little salt in this, and cut an umbilical cord, and then, of course, we'll circumcise at the same time. 1935, 55% of the U.S. male population is now circumcised. And the quotation says, "I suggest that all male children should be circumcised. This is against nature, but that is exactly the reason why it should be done. It's against nature." My God, let's try this one out. "We should cut out your appendix. Now, this is against nature, but that's all the more the reason it should be done. Oh, you've got a gallbladder? Listen, we should cut your gallbladder out. Of course, this is against nature." Now, I don't understand the logic behind these arguments. If it's against nature, why are we doing it? And if it isn't against nature, well, then why don't we go ahead and do it? I mean, what is it? "Nature intends that the adolescent male shall copulate as often and as promiscuously as possible, and to that end covers the sensitive glands so that it shall be ever ready to receive stimuli." My God. You know, up until 1935, the problem was masturbation, and now we can't copulate enough. I mean, this is without Viagra. Civilization, on the contrary, requires chastity, and the glands of the circumcised rapidly assumes a leathery texture less sensitive than skin. Thus, the adolescent has his attention drawn to his penis much less often. I am convinced that masturbation is much less common in the circumcised. With these considerations in view, it does not seem apt to argue that God knows best how to make little boys. Where did I hear that argument before? I better not pronounce that name. Circumcision, British Medical Journal, Volume 2, 1935, page 764. Well, by 1941, this is where I come in on the scene, from 35 to 41, routine circumcision does not necessitate handling of the penis by the child himself and therefore does not focus the male's attention on his own genitals. Masturbation is considered less likely. Alan F. Guttmacher, "Should the Baby Be Circumcised?" Parents Magazine, Volume 16, 1941, page 26. All right, so by 1941, we got Parents Magazine involved in the game, and it's now routine. Now, I want to point something out here. I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview of what's coming. When I was circumcised, my grandmother walked in and told the doctor that when you perform this circumcision, you're to cut off just the foreskin ahead of the glands itself. You are not to circumcise all the way back behind the gland's head, which is common. So when I was circumcised, they just cut off the tip, just the tip. I have been looked at very, very, very carefully by a number of people, and they look at me and they say, "Are you circumcised or not?" And I tell them, "Oh, yeah, I've been circumcised." But it's only half a job. Now, should it be that circumcision doesn't have to cut everything off to make that leathery glands hit? Has anybody ever thought about that? I mean, has anybody ever, taking a look at this procedure in practice? And if you think this is dirty or something, I want to point out to you that 90% of males by 1970 now in America are being circumcised. It's now down to about 63% by the year 2004 as I make this report. But still, that's over half. Most young boys now are being circumcised. So it's a pretty significant program. By 1971, 90% of the U.S. male population is being circumcised. There are no valid medical indications for circumcision in the neonatal period. Now, that was put out by the Committee on Fetus and Newborn Standards and Recommendations for Hospital Care of Newborn Infants, 5th edition, Evanston, Illinois, American Academy of Pediatrics, 1971, page 110. Now, from 1860 to 1971, this practice of circumcision will cure anything from psoriasis, the heartbreak of psoriasis can be cured now by 1971, we have an exact reversal in medical practice. Well, if they made a mistake about thalidomide in 1958, and they made a mistake about the medical benefits of circumcision, do you suppose that maybe the medical practitioners have made some other mistakes, like putting mercury into vaccines and things like that that causes autism? I just throw that out for your consideration, that maybe the medical doctors over there aren't gods after all, and maybe they make some mistakes once in a while. By 1994, here we are, 1994, 60% of newborn males in the U.S. are circumcised. So it's down from 90% in 1971 to 94%, 90% in 1971 to 60% in 1994. Circumcision, they tell us now, 1994, circumcision causes pain, trauma, and a permanent loss of protective and erogenous tissue. Removing normal, healthy, functioning tissue for no medical reason has ethical implications. Circumcision violates the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 5, and the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, Article 13. Leo Sorger to ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. Stop circumcision. OBGYN News, 1 November 1994, page 8. Boy, have we made a full circle now. Now, in 1998, circumcision is not a medical decision. Preventing an improbable future infection is a spurious indication. The standard of care is antibiotics, not amputation. Eileen Marie Wayne, MD, letters, Nothing to Debate on Circumcision, American Medical News, July 27th, 1998, on page 27. Now, this same woman, Eileen Marie Wayne, MD, writes again, as editor of a newspaper dedicated to infectious diseases, you know that antibiotics are the standard of care for infection and that surgery is a last resort for body parts for which there is no other cure. Perpetrating sexual surgery on healthy non-consenting minors under the legal age of informed consent or refusal to purportedly prevent an unlikely and curable future infection is unacceptable. Intentionally amputating healthy erogenous, see if I can pronounce this one, erogenous, E-R-O-G-E-N-O-U-S, erogenous, genital tissue from tethered, protesting infants is a surgical act of sexual sadism. Huh. I wonder if they could use a little anesthetic on there. You know, it evidently has not occurred to any of these medical doctors yet that when you perform this surgical operation that maybe a little Novocaine might help. But just a thought that came into my mind. We normally don't just get people's appendix out without a little anesthetic, now, do we? Never did occur to these people to use anesthetic when doing the surgical procedure. Hmm. Now, of course, in the early days, they said, we want to punish this kid. I mean, he's 16 years old, and he's masturbating. We're going to cut off the end of his penis, his foreskin over here. We're going to send some pain to this kid. We're going to teach this kid that sex is not for fun. This is serious business. Sounds kind of religious to me, but I guess medicine is kind of religion, isn't it? Don't these doctors practice in temples called hospitals, and aren't they kind of like gods in the ER over here barking out orders and commands? Well, the Kaiser Foundation's Edgar Schoen ignores the erogenous benefits of the foreskin and a man's birthright to the sexual fulfillment that he was born to experience. He would do well to stop promoting and perpetrating sexual surgery. He withholds from parents who have no ethical right to consent to unnecessary sexually disendowing surgery on their children the fact that the foreskin has sexual and erogenous functions. He contends that circumcision protects against sexually transmitted disease. Dr. Schoen's failed attempt to justify surgical genital abuse is a willful act of misrepresentation. It is a disgrace, and it's a discredit to the medical profession and infectious diseases in children. It's imperative that you also remove this tainted material to minimize liability to this publication from harmed patients, especially circumcised victims who developed AIDS in spite of being circumcised. Beyond patient harm, beyond medical ethics, publishing misinformation is a licensing and disciplinary issue of grave importance to everyone involved. That's Eileen Marie Wayne, MD, letters, Circumcision, Sexual Sadism, Infectious Diseases in Children, Volume 11, Number 2, February 1998. Hey, boy, have we gone full circle. From 1860, we're circumcising 0.001% of the U.S. male population. By 1971, we bumped it up to 90%. We're now down to 60%. We have a cure for everything. The main thrust of medicine was this terrible vice. They called it a vice, called masturbation. I don't know. I never saw anything in the Bible that said anything about masturbation being a vice or a sin. You'd have thought that if God was opposed to it, you know, no, he was opposed to bestiality. He's opposed to sodomy. But, you know, the sodomy and bestiality today are protected civil rights. Protected civil rights. God said that he wanted those people taken out and stoned to death. So the medical people come along, they don't seem to have any problem with the sodomy and bestiality, but boy, this masturbation thing's got to stop. Now, I would challenge each and every one of you to go through your Bible and see if you can find anything about masturbation in the Scripture. Now, could you do that for me? And send me an email and tell me that you found it. I couldn't find anything like that. So you get people that are real, real concerned about masturbation, which isn't even mentioned in the Scripture, and then where it is mentioned that you're not to practice sodomy and bestiality, another kinky, you know, go to Leviticus chapter 18. There's all kinds of sexual perversion. I mean, there is evil and wicked practices going on. Nobody seems to have any problem with any of that. I mean, after all, what consenting males do in their own bedroom, that's their business. Yeah, so we're told. Until, of course, they come down with AIDS. Now, these people who come down with AIDS then start marching and picketing. They go to Washington, D.C. and demand that the government fund $2 billion a year to find a cure for AIDS. In other words, they want to go out, practice sodomy, get AIDS, and then they want George Gordon to go out and pay money to get researchers to find a cure for their criminal behavior. And I'm sitting there going, how's that work? What's this all about? These same people, these medicos over here, boy, they're really down on this thing of circumcision. They don't seem to have any problems with late term abortion. Don't seem to have any problem with that. As I understand it, prior to Roe v. Wade, 39 women a year in the United States were dying because they needed an abortion and couldn't get it. 39, not thousands or tens of thousands, 39 on average per year. So now we have legalized abortion. We have 2.5 million fetuses a year being destroyed. They're not babies, you see. They're not born. They're just unwanted tissue. Now, that's called passing your seed through the fire to Moloch. It's a capital felony. Well, at least that's what Leviticus 20 verses 1 through 5 tells us, and God said he didn't want that done. Nobody seems to be too concerned about that. I don't see anybody suing. I don't see anybody getting excited about that. Well, I guess I should say the right to life people are excited about it. But I mean, you don't see the medical community over here excited about it. And I'm reading to you right here from the medical journals of the day, starting in 1860. You know, we started out with circumcision at 0.001%, followed it through. And did you notice all of the diseases that this thing would cure? So they said there's great medical benefits. Then in 1971, they totally reversed themselves out and they said, you know, there isn't a single medical benefit to this thing of circumcision. There isn't any medical justification for this at all. Well, then from 1860 to 1971, why are we circumcising all these babies? Wasn't it to make money, to pay your boat payments and airplane payments and to make your living, doctors? Isn't that why you were doing that? I mean, you know, the real truth of the matter is it was money, wasn't it? Didn't have anything to do with health, safety, or welfare of the public. Didn't have anything to do with religion or the covenant with Abraham. Medical doctors don't practice circumcision because they're real concerned about obeying God and keeping his commandments. These are the same people that practice abortion, isn't it? These people are in the business of making money. And after the United Nations enacted these various provisions that I read to you here, last page, these various provisions, and another come along saying, oh, well, now we've got to comply with the United Nations. We've got to comply with the world communist socialist order, and we've got to abolish circumcision. That's the real motivation in the medical community, is to comply with the United Nations, the New World Order. So we're going to abolish circumcision so that we can comply with the New World Order. Well, we'll take a look at this thing of circumcision from a medical perspective next time. Let's take a look and see if in modern times, I mean right up to the minute, yes, you know, like yesterday, last week, last month, last year, are there any medical reasons why circumcision might have some benefits for you? So we'll take a look at that when we come back next time. Now, you've been listening to The Law Hour, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour has been brought to you by The Law School as an educational service in the public interest. For more information about The Law Hour and the Gordon Law School, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Well, we're out of time. It's been good being with you. Thanks for listening, and until next time, goodbye, friends.